The media thinks we got the wrong Muslim for killing them. They admit and they do it in 1964 that they had the wrong 1966 problem. That they didn't have the one to kill Malcolm.
But what the hell did they kill?
They don't care right now.
But most black brothers, they don't need no witness.
And they wanted to finish the case that Muslims killed Malcolm so that those who loved Malcolm and those who loved Elijah Muhammad would clash with each other.
Right.
And eliminate each other, then white folk would be able to go on free. They would have the true baddest men that they feared, Elijah and his kind, student Malcolm, out of the way. So when the controversy was going back and forth, when Malcolm raised the question of Elijah Muhammad's morality, this inflamed every Muslim who was a follower of Mr. Muhammad. I mean, do you understand what it's like to believe in a man?
If you ain't never had that kind of commitment, none of you would believe. You didn't have that kind of commitment to stop the case that you had to Elijah Muhammad. You haven't had a leader that you walk behind with that kind of commitment. Many people don't even understand what it was in Mr. Muhammad that could get the commitment of a man like Malcolm so totally. Malcolm was denying his own life for his teacher. Ain't no ordinary man that evoked that kind of commitment, brother and sister. That's an extraordinary man that you've got to come to grips with. When Malcolm felt that his teacher betrayed him, the anger in him, the hurt in him, the pain in him, he lashed out. And in lashing out, even though the Muslims were lashing out at Malcolm, it created the climate. I mean, the climate was ready, the incendiary climate was there. Now the dirty FBI and CIA, see, they hide their hands in the whole mouth. Don't you know that the scripture says where there are two or three gathered together in my name, there I am also in the midst of you? That's for God and Jesus, and that's for the FBI too. You don't have no damn brand of secret that white folks don't know nothing about. Every damn thing you plan, you get on the phone. Hey, Joe, I got something in mind. Come on over. When you meet, he's meeting with you.
They got all kinds of ways, not only of monitoring Russia, monitoring China, monitoring Vietnam. Don't you know if they can monitor the country thousands of miles away, niggas ain't no problem. Is it an accident, brother, that Malcolm was searching people? Up until the day that Malcolm was assassinated, Malcolm was having everybody that came into the ballroom to hear him in all the search. They knew there was a threat on Malcolm's life, but no uniformed policemen were present. Is that an accident? No policemen were in the ballroom? Come on. And dudes just walked in with shotguns under their clothes? No, it didn't happen like that, brother and sister. There's a hidden agent that exploited an incendiary condition. And even though I believe that certain Muslims were responsible for the assassination of Malcolm X, I do not believe it could have gone without the complicity of the United States government in the way that they knew it and permitted it to happen. And let me tell you something. If you are a policeman and you suspect that a crime is about to be committed and you have foreknowledge of it, it is your duty as an officer of the law to stop the crime and punish the intended criminal for the intent to commit the crime. But if you hear that a crime is going to be committed and you aid that crime in being committed and then hide your dirty hands as though you did nothing, well, Malcolm is gone. And the last words that I spoke to Malcolm as I leave you, brothers and sisters, he said to me in his car on 2311 97th Street, and he said, I'm going to New York. He said, Brother Lewis, my enemies are going to one day be yours. And he said, I wish it was you being an example for me rather than me being an example for you. When Malcolm left the nation, Malcolm needed time to get to himself, to think, to reflect. Because when your whole mind revolves around a man and the teaching of that man, and you lose confidence in that man, then his teaching lose value to you, then you don't need to be out talking because you're confused. You need to get back, withdraw, review the situation. Gather yourself to emerge again. Malcolm didn't have no time to do that. And that's why every week in the last year of his life, he seemed to be changing his philosophy from week to week or from month to month. It was not that Malcolm was not a man that knew that change was necessary, but it was because he was still in the public while he was formulating new ideas and ways, and he should have been out of the public getting himself together and in tune. Now, why are you talking like this, Brother Farrakhan? Because this little brother, unknowing that Malcolm was actually prophetic in what he was saying, lived to walk right up in Malcolm's shoes. I also became national spokesman for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Frightening thing that as I became Mr. Muhammad's national spokesman, drew closer to the messenger, I became to him as Malcolm was to him, a spokesman and an articulator of his ideas. God knows he gave me a lucid tongue, but Elijah Muhammad fueled that tongue with knowledge. Malcolm groomed me, yes he did. But now there I was alone. My 9-year companion and friend gone, dead. And here I was, out there in a strange world, speaking for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And slowly but surely, people begin to admire Brother Farrakhan. Admire what? His brilliant speech. His ability to articulate ideas. But not my ideas. his ideas. But look at the messenger, recognizing he's getting older, recognizing his time among us was running short. What does a wise man do? He prepares his students for the eventuality of life. Look, brother, don't you go to the dojo? You know when you go to the dojo, and the
dojo is a place where they go through the martial arts.
Oh, nobody play with you when you get ready to throw me out. Come to the table of Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And at one time he would say to me things that would lift me up. And at another time he would say things to me that would have me going home and driving by the waterfront, crying, wondering, why he say that? Why he do that? I didn't understand. But I came to know something, brother and sister, because I too began to believe that Elijah Muhammad was jealous of me. Now listen, I'm confessing a thought. I'm confessing a thing that came up in my mind that I would beat out because I didn't want to entertain those kind of thoughts about my leader and teacher, because once you begin to think that your leader is jealous of you, you can't serve him no more. You understand? Now look, brother and sister, when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad departs from us, his son comes into power. I know what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said to me. But in his departure, I feel totally lost. Wallace Muhammad says, I know the way. I said, go ahead, brother. I'll back you up. As God is my witness, no envy, not jealousy, but recognizing that leadership is a responsibility and you can't play games with people's lives over vanity of being called a leader. If I didn't feel that I knew where the next step was, why should I try to fight for a seat that I didn't feel qualified to sit in? So when Wallace D. Muhammad said he knew the way, I said, go on, brother. Take it and I'll back you up as long as you with your father. I'm trying to defend a policy that I just ain't comfortable with. And now I'm beginning to feel this thing that Malcolm felt. Everywhere I went, people looking at me as an enemy, trailing behind me in the Caribbean and South America, I mean, actually lying on me and my motive. Hear me now. But before the messenger left, this is a very key point. Please, please, if you don't hear nothing else, I want you to hear this key point. After I had taken all of the envy and jealousy of the laborers of Mr. Muhammad that I could, I decided we were going to have a showdown at high noon. Mr. Muhammad's house, and I was going to get to the bottom of this. If we had to fight, we'd go down. I get to Mr. Muhammad's table and take the court of law. Can I wait for you? Huh?
All right. I got to Mr. Muhammad's table, and when I brought up this envy and this jealousy and was getting into the fight, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad hit the table with his hand and said, "Brother, seek refuge in Allah from the envier when he envies." And he got up and he walked out. And when he walked out of the room, he broke my fan because I was ready to fight. He wasn't there. He killed my fight. I couldn't understand. Then he comes back in 5 minutes later and he sits at the table and says, "Now,
he said, when you're getting ready to use a piece of wood to hold up the corner of a building, you have to put stress on it. And if it cracks under the stress, you know that's not the piece of board you were looking for. And you throw it away and you get another." He never said another word. I don't think I understood it until 9 months ago. This is the kind of man that Elijah Muhammad was and is. He drops things in your brain that have time capsules. 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, it opens up a whole new avenue for you. The man was and is a master teacher. It was my thinking that he was jealous of me, listen to me good now, that made me stumble. And I slipped. And I fell. And when Wallace Muhammad, now I'm telling you what I'm beginning to understand about Malcolm's mind. When Wallace Muhammad began attacking his father, this meant that if his father wasn't any good, all the body of knowledge that he taught us, we had nothing in it to look to. So this rendered us confused, immobile, unable to function. Until we got a grip on something that we could hold on to, we were finished. And that's what happened to Malcolm. Malcolm needed to withdraw and get a grip on his mind. He didn't have that chance. And the messenger kept warning me. He said, "Brother, remember Malcolm. And don't go the way of Malcolm, brother. And all that Malcolm wanted, brother, will come to you." I didn't know what he meant. Now, 4 years after Mr. Muhammad's departure, I understand this by the grace of God. And I shall explain. Why did all this jealousy, why was it directed to Malcolm? Why did Elijah Muhammad seem to direct it to Malcolm? You know why, brothers and sisters? Because if Elijah Muhammad knew that his time among us was limited, somebody had to be prepared to carry on his work. The hadith of Prophet Muhammad says, the three most envied men is a rich man who gives away his wealth to the poor, a wise man who teaches knowledge to the ignorant, and the man to whom the Holy Quran is revealed. Malcolm should never have run from envy. Malcolm ultimately had to face envy and jealousy, because if you are going to be a leader, your people are not always going to understand where you're going. Some of them are going to hate you. Some of them are going to scorn you. Some of them are going to speak evil of you. But you've got to be able to take it all and hold your course and be steady as you are, and never become vindictive against the people that are against you, because you know they don't understand. But if you understand, then you've got to hold your course. And what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was doing, as I later learned, was directing that to Malcolm and watching to see how Malcolm handled it.
It may seem cruel. It grieves me to know that it broke a man and led to that man's death. But I'm here today because Malcolm died.
Yes, sir.
That I might live.
Yes, sir.
Hear me now, brother. That man was a friend to me. He was a brother to me. He had never told me anything other than right. And the last words he said is, I wish it was you being an example for me rather than me being an example for you. So when the time came that I could no longer agree with Wallace D. Muhammad, I had an example to go by. I quietly withdrew. My brothers in the world community attacked me viciously and still do to this very day. They try to read my motives. Farrakhan just in this for money. You a damn fool. I'm not no little foolish, lightweight fella. I got talent. I don't need to be playing this kind of foolishness to be a man to get money from you. Hell no. All that a man have will he give for his life. I don't need to be out here saying these kind of things, angering the United States government to have you and everybody else for a damn dollar that I may not live to spend. It ain't money that I want. I want to see the unity of the black man. And I recognize Elijah Muhammad was no wicked man. Yes, Muhammad did have wives, not little teenage secretaries. That's slander. And that was unworthy of Malcolm. That kind of use of words was unworthy of Malcolm. You can't go in no African society and condemn an African leader because he's got more than one wife. They laugh at you, brother. Why did Elijah Muhammad have more than one wife? Because ultimately and eventually, when the liberation struggle comes down, the ranks of the black male is going to be decimated, leaving a lot of women around here with no men. And a man had to show us how to take more than one wife and be honorable to them all. Elijah, listen good, damn it. I want to defend the righteous man. Elijah Muhammad wasn't no man running around here because he was after some damn woman. With all the birth control pills and abortion clinics, what the hell would he look like fathering 13 children? The man got more sense than that. You don't find President Kennedy's babies popping up everywhere. You don't find Eisenhower's crap everywhere. Those men may have had carnal desires, but they never produced children, did they? Elijah Muhammad could have said to a sister, there's an abortion clinic around the corner if you're pregnant. Have the baby. Put them in home. Take care of them. Educate the children. But why didn't he let it be known? That's his domestic life. And at a certain point in your development, you would grow to be able to handle his domestic life without looking upon him as a low-down, filthy, immoral man. How could he be low-down and filthy and at the same time inspire righteous conduct in us, in Malcolm, in all of those of us who believed in him? He was no low-down man. God damn it, and I defy the whole world. I stand against the whole damn world for that man and what that man taught and what that man was and what that man is. He wasn't jealous of Malcolm. When a man knows himself, he don't have to be jealous and envious of his student, but he wanted to make Malcolm, that object, that real leader, Because you can't be no leader of black people and not have your own people hate you.
Go ahead, Sister Abu Bakari. The head of the Republic of New Africa. What? Your own people.
Who taught you that, Brother Farrakhan? Malcolm did. Why won't you come out and attack the Muslims since they're attacking you? Because Malcolm said he was an example for me. And I know Whitey's sitting behind the door waiting for me to create the climate. It's already there. All I got to do is start playing into it. And then brother will kill brother for what? It ain't worth it. So when white folks say, Brother Farrakhan, we'd like to interview you for People magazine, I say, go see other people. New York Times called me twice. We want to feature you in a story. Oh, hell. I know there was a time when I would give one of my teeth in the front to get a featured story in the New York Times. I told the cat from the Times, excuse the expression, I said, I will not be taking any interviews for 2 or 3 years. You may come back and see me then. Chicago Tribune said, Mr. Farrakhan, we just talked to Wallace and they say over there that you're in this for money. What do you say? I say that they can say what they please. Thank you. When Imam Wallace D. Muhammad printed in the Bilalian News an appeal to Farrakhan, one of the Bilalian News reporters came to me and said, what is your answer to the Imam's appeal? I said, I have his telephone number. And whenever I get ready to answer him, I will call him directly. I will not speak to him through you or through any other media. They're trying to make the problem between me and W.D. Muhammad. It's not a problem between me and W.D. Muhammad. The problem is between W.D. Muhammad and his father. I choose to follow his father. I believe in the correctness of his father's position. And I hope to prove to all that the Islam that his father taught is broad enough to include all that Malcolm envisioned. Yes, it is. It's broad enough to embrace nationalism. And yet not narrow enough to exclude the universality of its truth. I will prove that the Nation of Islam, as conceived and taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, is not some lightweight, limited thing, but it has the capacity within it to embrace us in our development. But I leave that not to talk it. But one day soon, we shall demonstrate it. Yes, and therefore, I refuse the media because I don't think, in reality, we need the media. I don't think that we need to go in front of the television talking about strategy for black liberation. There's no white general that talks his strategy in front of his enemy. And we don't know who our friends are until they're tried and tested and brought through the fire. So whatever thoughts you have for the liberation of our people, you have to store them away. And what you say publicly or even privately, don't be afraid to go back out and say it publicly again, because you're going to hear it again. So as I leave you, brothers and sisters, I thank you for your indulgence. I think that my experience enables me to build a bridge between Malcolm and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I think my experience shows me
that we have got to be able to get around the stumbling blocks of our personality and search for truths that will live longer than our persons or our personality. I bear witness as I leave you that the struggle will intensify. I bear witness as I leave you, brothers and sisters, that America is not going to get better for the black man. It's going to get exceedingly worse. I want to warn you, brothers and sisters, that as America is shut down more and more by the international ramifications of this which is called inflation, as white people begin to suffer more and more and have to revise their standard of living downward, they're going to take off the mask of civility, and a naked beast will be staring us in our faces. Oh, beloved black brother and sister, there is nowhere to run. We're going to have to dig in and remember that if we're going to start fighting each other, we only weaken ourselves for the ultimate challenge that we will eventually face in the age. So my brothers and my sisters, I want you to know that I am not an exclusivist as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I am an inclusivist, meaning that I want to and desire to and will, by the help of Allah, work with all of my brothers and sisters who are in this struggle for the liberation of black people. I will do whatever I can in whatever way we can to aid you in your development. For I don't see us as many ideas. I see us now coming to grow into the respect of each other and each other's ideas for liberation. Sister Abu Bakari, I agree that unless and until reparations is brought before the world, we don't have nothing. Affirmative action is not what we want. Unless it's the affirmative action of understanding that 400 years of sojourn in America demands something, and we did not give up our inheritance or our heritage in Africa. We owe, something is owed to us from both sides of this coin, and we intend to collect on both sides. Hear this now. I want my nationalist brothers to understand this. We must be nationalists. We got to think in terms of a nation and all that goes for a nation. We have to understand that until and unless we have land that is our own, we cannot build any sound sovereign nation. We've got to have some of it. You say, well, how are you going to get it? The how, we will discuss. The why, we can say we need land. And we're going to have it. Or everybody will be deprived of the right to live on their land. Because ain't none of you had no damn land until we gave it to you. That is why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad don't claim Africa. He claims the entire 196,940,000 square miles of it. All of it, you're going to have to look for the black man. And damn it, you're not going to make mockery of your father no more. As the Bible teaches you, honor your father and your mother, that your days might be long in the land which the Lord thy God giveth you. And we gave you you. You did not give it to yourself. And we sent you into that which you call Asia. And we chose the best part for ourselves ever since. It was me. That which you call Africa. And that chosen piece of real estate called the Middle East. We know when you got there and the circumstances under which you got there, and we know how long you got to remain there to it. Because that land nobody's going to claim but the righteous. And you're not going to claim the Holy Land if you're not going to live according to God's law. And I'm here to tell you there'll be a change of powers in the Middle East. You're not going to hold on to those sacred houses of Allah in unrighteousness. The Saudi government is unworthy to maintain power over the holy shrines. And all got to pay today. Ain't nobody getting away. You won't hold on to Jerusalem either. You won't hold on in Africa. And you better try to hold on to the little peace that we gave you that is yours. I thank you for listening. And I pray, Allah, that you understand. You just keep your eyes open. And you're going to see things happen in America and speed up the cadence. You see those floods in Mississippi? And in Alabama? And in Louisiana? And up in Illinois? You haven't seen nothing yet. You out here in California? You keep looking. This is a wicked hellhole, this California. Wicked hellhole, boy. If Sodom and Gomorrah couldn't make it, I don't know how in the hell you think you can.
I mean, brother, there was a time when we wouldn't even tolerate this, you remember? There was a time when if you was a sister, you had to hide that. And when you walked out among us, you had to act like a real man and put a piano on your back. But today, faggots, come on out the closet. Poor sister trying to be men. Don't you know we got to straighten our thing up? So as I leave you, don't talk no liberation for black people with no cocaine sniffing. Your nose is so messed up. They got to take you in the hospital and cauterize your nose. You looking for black liberation and snow. Soon as this thing is over, you going to be high, some of you. And right down there, you're in the free. You know, well, people that are jealous, you know, we let this right here make a damn fool out of you. You know that? We need to get up, don't you think?
Right.
So stop letting him program you to get down. Don't be out here doing the freak. But all the time you get into that damn freak, freaky, you know what you suggest to yourself? You keep suggesting to yourself freakish behavior. And then you begin to tolerate that kind of freakishness that does not lead to nation building. It destroys the nation after America. After all,
not gonna get away with this madness.
We're coming to you. Your brother, we're coming to you. You're going to get your things? Yeah. Ain't going to be no stealing. Ain't going to be no dope selling. Ain't going to be no pimping of black women, hustling black women. That game is all of us. We either going to clean up or we'll be out of it. Totally. It's got to come that way. No, 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 Serena said. I don't think I'm quoting it, so I better paraphrase. That in order to be a revolutionary and to be really free, you have to be willing to die for what you believe in.
Right.
But you also have to be willing to take life. You know, when you love yourself and your people enough, there'll be a time for teaching and a time for warning and a time for accountability.
Okay.
I want to be accountable to God, but I want to be accountable to you. If I want to be in front of people, I want you to know that I'm not ripping you off. And if I'm ripping you off, I need to be better.
Right.
As an example to everyone else that would rip off his people, see what happened to Farrakhan? That's what's happened to you. And until your politicians and your leaders and your teachers know that they got to be accountable for what they say and what they do in the dark, then we'll continue to be people. But when you put your politician in Washington and he make a funny deal and come back and be required of it, then what happened to it? College and so you know. He didn't show up for Congress due. Wait, we don't know. Then the next one that gets voted in, whatever you want to be the second, Washington, to be your representative at last. You've got to be accountable to you. And you've got to be accountable for your actions. You believe it?
That's right.
You believe it? What do you think? You think Ayatollah Khomeini is wrong?
No, sir.
You think the Ayatollah is wrong? If the dude is stealing and whatnot and cut off his head, you think that's wrong?
No, sir.
Well, they have everything we can chop off in America. Don't you think stealing was shot? Quick, brother. All you have to do is do is walk down the street like that. Well, that's what that law is in the East, and a law similar to that is in African society. And there'll be a law similar to that right here in good old black America.
That's right.
And don't you know, in white America, see that we are not playing with ourselves. Everybody will walk among us with more respect.
That's right.
You hear me?
Yes,
when we pull ourselves together, white people will automatically straighten up. When they come in your midst, they won't play around with your home. Won't be no pinching and winking and going on. They'll respect you as we respect you. And now, if they got stores in our community, they will not be selling hog and whiskey
right.
And everything else in our community while they claim to be Muslims. Now, we're going to get you for that.
Right.
I'm telling you, man, we're going to get you for that.
Right.
That's right. You're not going to play that crap over here because you wouldn't do it over there.
That's right.
That show you really not a follower of Prophet Muhammad.
Right.
That's why God had to give up somebody because you're not fit to carry
that. That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
I just want to lay that on you. I guess it's either going to have a question period or?
Yes, sir.
Oh, we're going to have to get some water.
Questions.
We'll take three questions, brothers and sisters, if there is any, or are any. Are there any questions? Three? Are there any questions? Dr. Karinga, you have a question? I'm glad to see you, beloved brother. That's one of our brilliant
theoreticians? Right there, brothers and sisters. And I say that because Brother Farrakhan admires him. And I hope that in the future that we will learn to respect those that are among us that work for us while they are among us. Huh? I see Dr. Karenga's work all over America. All over America. Everywhere I go in the nationalist community, I see his work. And I have to respect and honor that work and honor the man that produced that work. This development, we're not going to be about cutting each other's throat. That day is all over. We're going to be about helping each other to get where all of us want to go. I see two questions, brother and brother. I saw brother's hand first, all right? Yes, brother. His question is it worth our time going to the universities in America? Yes, sir, it is. Why is it worth our time? America has some very fantastic universities and very great knowledge that is given out. If you have no knowledge of yourself coming into these universities, then they socialize you and program you into a useful tool for their service. But if you've got the knowledge of yourself, you can come into these universities and extract out of them what we need as a people to go on into liberation. Yes, there's a lot that these universities have to offer, so don't say, I ain't going to no white universities. It would be fine if we had universities of our own, and I'm sure we will. But until that happens, come and get whatever you can out of these universities, then use it for the advancement of yourself, your people, all over the world, and then the rest of humanity. But first, get the knowledge and use it for yourself and your people in America, then your people abroad, then the world. Yes, brother. Most free independent countries are sending their nationals here to study. They don't come here to learn Western ideas and philosophy, but the Western man makes sure that he puts his ideas and philosophy in you before you go back to your country, so that he has an in that country through the students that have been taught here. But Nkrumah studied here. And he got something. So, brother, yes, apply yourself, please. That's how you're going to make it. Apply yourself to study, but the main ingredient of study is the knowledge of self. Thank you. Yes, sir, brother. Oh, brother. Well, it's been a very long time just to get us to recognize the little that we do recognize about our need for a nation. I imagine that it will be quicker to build a nation the more we see that we can rely less on white America. Listen to me carefully. As the riches of America diminishes, our desire to rely on ourselves will increase. And the more our desire for self-reliance increases, the faster will be our pace in building a nation. And it won't be as long as it has been. It certainly won't take 400 years. It will not take no 400 years. But we'll get it started, and our children will carry it on. Yes, brother. Thank you. I think Roots has had some positive effects, but also some negative effects. Television as a medium is geared more for entertainment than actual history. And I think we can agree that the television docudramas of King and Roots
went very much away from the book, Ruth, and went very much away from the actual life of Dr. King. They have to make real life entertainment. So in this, there's always an entertainment value, and then there's always the subtle seeds of the script writers and those producers who have another motive other than what Alex Haley had in mind. Now, Alex Haley was not in complete control of how Roots came out, and he will admit this. When Alex Haley wrote for Reader's Digest, he interviewed Mr. Muhammad and he interviewed Malcolm. Malcolm was the first one that told Alex Haley that some of our forebears who came to the United States or were brought to the United States were Muslims. When Alex did his research, he sent word to me. I got a letter from him saying that what Malcolm had told him he had found to be true. But the way Roots depicted the village, it was a false picture. But I saw my children watch Roots, and I saw the pain in their face as they saw what black people went under, and Roots was very light in what it portrayed. And I mean, my youngster, 5 years old, 6 years old, he looked at that thing and the tears rolled down his cheek. He said, "Daddy, were we treated like that?" I said, "Oh, son, much worse than that." I mean, it impacted in that way, all right? But then if you watch Roots 1, later on it got to the scene where the boy was angry and the white girl was talking to him, then the seed dropped. Very fertile seed. Well, if you're against white people, you're against me. And she laid it on the little boy, and he smiled and they embraced. Those kind of things sink deep into our people. It had positive and negative effects. Roots, too. Brother, by that time you could see the degeneration of things. Because not only did Roots 2 have less impact than Roots 1 in a positive sense, but coming right up to the Malcolm scene, the way they portrayed Malcolm and the way they laid on that scene of Malcolm's assassination, and the way they portrayed Muslims, they had another thought in mind. I'm looking at it from that kind of personal viewpoint. And then to have Alex Haley do a commercial for the United States Army. I show you, brother. Things are pretty rough. And even when they display our roots, they control the content. But if you contrast that with Holocaust and the Jewish telling of their story, they made sure that when you left that movie or that televiewing, you had a compassionate heart for Jewish suffering. That was not the case with Ruth. It polarized both people. I mean, black folks the next day were hot as hell at that first showing of Ruth. But the last showing, I didn't feel that kind of spirit. It was like, well, we in now. We in now. I think that we have to ultimately move, brothers and sisters, to write our own history, as we have great black historians that are doing it. Chikanta Diop, Dr. Chancellor Williams, Dr. Ben Dockerman. Our own historians must be honored, revered, and cherished by us. And then we must develop the type of television expertise to put together documentaries that tell our story the way our story needs to be told. Now to you, my dear brother, as an African, and we as Africans transplanted in America, if I may use those words, we need to strengthen our ties. And we need to do everything in our power to break up the poison that is being spread between us and our African brothers. Every campus that I've gone on to where they have African students, and the BSU or the Black Student Union, they have no rapport. It is worse now than it ever was in the 60s and even in the 50s. We need each other. And we have got to see the full dimensions of our struggle. That Africa is important to our struggle. But as Maulana Ron Karenga said, and I agree, that until we free ourselves here first, we can't be qualified to help our brothers in Africa or anywhere else. That is true. But do you realize what we have among ourselves? We've got the technical expertise in every field of endeavor to lift our people all over the world if we brought our knowledge home and used it for self. That's why this thing here, brother, this is not a joke. Moses grew up in Pharaoh's house and he learned all the arts and sciences and techniques of Pharaoh, then he used it for the liberation of his people. We grew up in Pharaoh's house. And we have learned all of Pharaoh's stuff, both evil and good. Now what we've got to do is use what we have learned for the liberation of our people here and all over the world. So brother, we lock hands together as brothers. We love you. Sister and sister, these are the last two questions.
In light of how American society is separated, what do you feel the Black woman's role in being a direct part of the liberation?
Oh, sister, I'm so glad you asked that question. Because here again is a lot of misconception about the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. We thought that Elijah Muhammad was, I guess they would call him a male chauvinist. And if you go by outer appearances, it would seem that way. But I want to say this about Mr. Muhammad. In the early 30s, do you know he had women ministers? This is true. Those women ministers, sister ministers we call them, were so fiery, brothers would sit on the front row and they couldn't help but accept the teachings after the sisters got through walking on them. But it reinforced the old thing coming up through the matriarchal society that America produced. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad felt, and I like his rationale, that he had to pull the sister back and push the brother out, whether he was qualified or not. Get out there and make an attempt to leave. Do you know why? Because if we didn't do that, we would continue to hide behind the fearlessness, the courage, the bravery, the intelligence of our women's folk. This is not a denial of what our women have, but how could we ever assert ourselves as men unless somebody pushed us out there and made us do? So what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did, if you notice, In the early 30s, we didn't have women that had college degrees or even high school diplomas. We were mostly unlearned. He pulled the sisters in, pushed the brother out, told the sisters, hear me now, that your base of operations is the home. Your base, not your place, your base. Because the art of homemaking is lost to Black women. And I do not care how much intellectual expertise you gather. If you don't know how to make a man happy, you ultimately are not happy yourself. And the art of making a man happy is the art of producing a heavenly home environment. For the strength of a nation is in the strength of male and female commitment to each other. The strength of a nation is in the strength of its family. And the strength of a family is in the strength of the home. You see that? Alright? So, I'm going to say this to you, sister. As God is my judge, we don't ever want to see our woman walking behind us. We are revolutionary. In a very unique sort of way, our women had to step back in order for us to grow in leadership. You know why? Because a woman cannot respect a man who refuses to take his place. And when a woman finds that a man refuses to take his place and doesn't show her that he is worthy of being honored, she treats him like a child.
Right.
And most of our women do not have men. They have children that they nurture. And this is why a woman can actually take off her brassiere and just jiggle her breast in a man's face, and he go wild. We should have been off the breast since we were 2 years old. But we got children around here running after boobs, running after butt. And this woman knows you're nothing but a child and a chump. But I'm going to tell you, brother, what is making me a man? The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, when I was no man at all, taught my wife to respect me, not for what I was, but for what I had the potential of being. Now hear me. That wife of mine, as a sister in the Muslim girls training class, learned how to show me respect even when I wasn't worthy of it. I've been married 25 years to the same woman. Hear me now, brother. And I'm growing into a man today because that woman knew how to help me to become one. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, when he asks you for something, show him respect. Honor him. I mean, I was worthy of it. But that woman honored me. She would say to me, and this was no subservient thing now, because I only struck her once in 25 years. When I struck her that once, she struck me back immediately. And that was the end of them striking days. So there ain't no subservient thing, but that woman, honest to God, that woman that is my wife, she handled me beautifully. We've had arguments, but never them kind of arguments where, you know, it gets to this point. She knew when I was reaching that point that would make me less than a man. Because you're always less than a man when you got to beat up a woman. She would, you know, she would just be quiet. And later on, I would come to see what she was saying. Women are very powerful, brother. And don't you know, sister, if you can make a man think about you in the inferior high heel shoes, you put on high heel shoes and put on a properly dressed man is reading a book. You want to read a book. You don't want to be bothered like this, but you want his attention. You know how to get it. Just walk in, make a little noise. And you move in such a way when you look up in the book, he's got the picture. And after the picture develops, you know he don't want no book no more. He wants you. Sisters know how to do that, Daddy. Sisters know how to suggest to a man's mind. I've actually had conversations with sisters. And they try to talk into a, you know, a romantic thing. I suppose. Oh, brother.
Well, the brother's not too bad himself, you know. But you never get by a woman. A woman sees you coming long before you even start to do anything. But she prays like she don't know what you're up for. But I ain't never met a dumb woman in my life. It's fun. Well, sister, if you can do that awfully, the suggestion to a man's mind, those kind of things, don't you know if you learn how to suggest other things to his mind, you can build him up that way. And my wife, thanks to Allah for all the Elijah Muhammad and the way he's done, that's the reason I'm able to come here and leave Chicago and fly here. And my wife is not worried about her husband. And I'm not worried about my wife. And I could leave and go into another part of the country. But that woman knows that my commitment is to black people, and her commitment is to help me in my commitment to the struggle of liberation for our people. So I expect to be with this woman until they put me in there. And I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, Elijah Muhammad, produce that. Brothers, you don't have to stand apart because I can't see the people. I just want to look at it. And so, in fully answering your question, sister, your role is right beside you. Your role is to develop all of your talents, capabilities, and utilize those capabilities for the struggle of liberation. If it's flying a plane, if it's going into outer space, if it's working in the chemistry lab, or if it's running a factory, running a school, whatever it is, you've got the quality and capability to do it. That's what you must do. But never forsake the home base. Because without the home, you don't have nothing in the factory that will keep you happy, nothing in space that will keep you happy. Because your happiness is a man. And a man's happiness is a woman. That's his comfort happiness. But the real happiness of a man is seeing his ideas come to fruition. And that, we complement each other. That's our role. So let's not join with the liberation movement. I don't want to see you boxing with white women for women's liberation. Because you ain't got nothing to be liberated from to take out. Because you ain't never had no man to rule you. Now, no black men. He don't rule you. He may brutalize you, but he don't rule you. Now, there is a difference, you know. Because you have never had no non-private thoughts about it. I mean, you know I mean, where he's coming from. You just choose to go along with it. But you see him. So you don't need that. What you need is for this man to grow up and see you not as an instrument of prayer. That all he wants you for is the bed and half the leftover he's finished with you. What we've got to see is that our women have a lot to do about the development of our world. You see this paper? The final call. This is our first paper. I hope that you will read it. We're going to try to perfect it and make it better every edition. But you know who helped me to put this out? A woman. You know why I wanted a woman to help me with this paper? I ain't want a man. I wanted a woman. I had something in the back of my mind. I had an idea for the paper. But like a man has a sperm, he gives it to a woman. Does he give him back a sperm? She evolves, develops that sperm, and gives him back a child. Don't you know there's an aesthetic quality in a woman that represents the beauty of the divine creator? Men seem like they're satisfied in a bungalow. You get a room or a house, whatever it is, turn it over to her and say, go ahead, baby, and beautify. She'll take a common thing, she'll beautify it, amplify it, and when you see it, you won't hardly recognize it. She'll take the germ of what you got, and she'll bring you back something that's life. She can take your ideas And when she gets finished with your idea, she'll have life and beauty in that idea. That's why when you leave a woman out of things, you leave the most, one of the most important ingredients in forming the thing out of it. That's why all male-dominated societies say, because it don't reflect the creative process. See this paper? When you touch it, you feel it. I knew what I'm doing now. I mean, I hate God things, you know what I mean? I mean, what would I look like snuggled up with a man? Oh, ah, dude. I don't know how the hell you brothers can do that thing. Anyway, you explain that in court later. I want to take with it for salt and have some feel to it that. And when you see it, you know that somebody cares. When you look at it, look how well laid out that thing is. That sister did that. I wanted the substance of it, we could give her, but I wanted her to put the aesthetic quality to it and beautify the substance. And that's what she did. I think she did a beautiful job, and I love her for it. And I'm saying that that's what I had in my mind. And I'm telling you, brother, the misuse of the woman will be the destruction of our nation. The proper use of the woman is the proper use of yourself and the fervor of your nation. When you put her down, you put yourself down. When you pick her up, you pick yourself up, because she is and represents the future of you. So when you mistreat a woman, you ain't just mistreating her. You hate the future. That's your future. So brother, be careful how you put your hand in your future's face. Because you see that sister? When she's carrying that light for you, brother, she can do something to that light while she's carrying it to turn it against you right from here. Now, you don't think so. But brother, scientists are beginning to prove that a sister, if she smokes, that smoke will affect the lifespan of a child. If she drinks, her alcohol will kill the lifespan of that child and interfere with that child's brain and motor function, because you're bathing the child in alcohol as you're drunk and carrying a new life. Well, if you can do that physically, you can also do that mentally by the things you think while you're carrying and forming new life. And the way she thinks, brother, is largely the way we treat her. I mean, we got a lot to learn about life and how to handle life properly. Okay? Thank you for listening.